The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud progeny of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T here. Welcome to episode 37. A few weeks ago, I took a little trip up to northwestern Nebraska, specifically to visit the site called the Battle of, or the Massacre, I should say, of Wounded Knee. I don't know how many of you have heard of this Massacre of Wounded Knee. It's part of the Indian Wars, the latter end of it. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, I'll give you a quick synopsis. The U.S. Army wanted revenge for Custer's defeat after he picked on someone that was a bit too bad for him. He went charging into a major Sioux Indian camp, 5,000 to 10,000 Sioux Indian warriors, all armed, and we all know what happened to Custer. He met his demise, and history has convinced me, the record has convinced me, that Custer got what was coming to him. Now, you don't go charging into someone's encampment, when they're just minding their own business. He and Major Reno did this. Major Reno survived it. Well, the Army wanted revenge for this. So they went looking around for Sioux Indians to either round up or kill, preferably kill. Well, they found some. Turns out, Chief Bigfoot of the Minneconjou Sioux Indians. There are several bands of Sioux Indians. They're the Oglalas. Chief Red Cloud and Chief Crazy Horse were among those groups. There were the Hunkpapa Sioux Indians, of which Sitting Bull is the most famous example. There are the Minneconjous and so on. Well, Chief Bigfoot was a Minneconjou. He had heard about what happened at the Battle of Little Bighorn when Custer met his demise for attacking people. He knew it was going to happen, so he said, I'm seeking some safety with some people who are, you know, tough, who could actually defeat the U.S. Army. So he and his Minneconjou Sioux headed straight for the Oglala and the Hunkpapa camp. They didn't make it. The U.S. Army, hunting around for revenge, found them first. They had encamped at night, so the Army surrounded their camp with these mortars, these large mortars called Hotchkiss cannons. Basically, they fire exploding projectiles at a rate of nearly 1 per second. Back in the 1800s, the late 1800s, that was pretty badass. They do a lot of damage. So, the U.S. Army surrounded the camp, guns pointed, and said, give up your guns. The Minneconjou generally did so, except for a few people. One in particular said, no, I'm not giving up my gun. Apparently, he understood the wisdom of staying armed to be able to defend himself. Well, somebody fired a shot, and then all hell broke loose. The Army started firing point blank at everybody, indiscriminately, men, women, and children. The Hotchkiss mortars that were spread all around on the little hills, the prairie hills there, started firing and just ripped the camp to shreds. They were just strafing and raking the encampment. Blew up every tent, every teepee. People inside, a very few escaped, managed to escape, but the majority of them did not. The majority of those who were trying to escape were shot in the back. This is what happens when you give up your guns. Now, I'd heard a lot of this before. My friend up in, I should say my friends, because it's a husband and wife team, up in northwestern Nebraska, filled me in on a few of those details. It was them that I went to visit. I'd always wanted to see this place called Wounded Knee. I wanted to see the place where such an atrocity could take place. And so I got in my car, and I drove to see my friends. They said, yeah, come on up. We'll show you. You know, we'll teach you a little history. I'm glad I made that drive. There are a lot of things that you see driving across the country that you just simply cannot see from 35,000 feet into the air in an airplane. Folks, I have never seen so much corn in my life. Wow, the Midwest really is farm country. I also saw more soy farms than I ever wanted to see in my life. Plenty of cattle, too, so that's basically it. Corn, soy, and cattle. Wow, lots of that. And I saw this. Glad I saw this. Well, my friends did take me to the site of where the Wounded Knee event took place. Got to tell you, I was expecting something a little more, I don't know, impressive, geologically speaking. It's just prairie, folks. It's just rolling prairie hills, grasslands. But when I got there, I understood what had happened there. My friend, who is a full-blooded Oglala Sioux Indian, and who grew up just down the road from where this event took place, knows the area very well. He pointed out where Chief Bigfoot's band of Minneconjou Sioux were encamped, where the Hotchkiss cannons were, where the church used to stand. Now it's a mass burial grave there. And by the way, this is a Sioux Indian tribe burial ground. Not just folks who are buried there, from that event are buried there, but also folks from the Vietnam War, World War II, and so on, are also buried there when they were brought home. Looking around, I guess appropriately enough, I saw a big, hairy-looking storm cloud heading straight for us. The wind was picking up and all that, and this cloud just looked like it was going to dump on us once it arrived. I thought, how appropriate. Folks, this is what happens when you give up your guns, and especially when you're not the favored population. Things like this can happen. We've talked about it before. There are numerous examples. Pol Pot's Cambodia, Hitler's Nazi Germany, what's going on in Mexico right now with the people defenseless against the Knights Templar and Los Zetas, and how people in various dictatorships like North Korea are treated, Red China, and so on. Vietnam. I used to work with several Vietnamese fellows, and they told me, man, and I will quote him, man, the cops come up to you, they beat your ass, you can't do nothing about it. What are you going to do? You protest, they beat you some more. He was very glad to make it here to the United States, to get away from that, this guy who told me that. I haven't talked with him in a long time, but I think he's right. History is rife with such examples. That's one of our less, glorious moments in the history of our country. I like to think sometimes, what would happen if Chief Bigfoot's band of Minneconjou Sioux had been better armed? Now, they wouldn't have been able to resist those Hotchkiss cannons, no. But maybe they would have presented enough of a deterrent to get the army to think twice. Maybe we don't want to get our people killed. Maybe we don't want casualties amongst ourselves because, these so-called red men can actually shoot back. Maybe they would have left him alone. Stranger things have happened, folks. So I'm glad I went there. On the way back, I reflected on all this. I also stopped by Fort Kearney, or Kearney. I think it's pronounced Fort Kearney. Famous for its Oregon Trail heritage. Well, it was also a place where disarmed Indians were dealt with and ultimately sent to Indian territory. Now we call it Oklahoma. I know a guy from Oklahoma. I've not been there myself, but he's from there, this guy I'm talking to you about. And he said, yeah, no wonder they sent him to Oklahoma. Nobody wanted to go to Oklahoma. That land is harsh there. Now, not saying anything bad about Oklahoma or Oklahomans, but I think without irrigation, even folks from there are going to say it's a little hard to farm there and grow crops. They didn't have the modern irrigation technology back then that we have today. So yeah, it could be a little rough. My fellow liberals, we are upset now. So many of us are upset now about a brown-skinned man who got shot by a white cop in a place called Ferguson, Missouri. We'll get to that at a later point. So I got to ask you, given that this happened to not just the Native Americans, but also Black Americans and so many other people throughout the world, even white Jewish people in Europe, if we're so upset about what happened to Michael Brown, and others like him, Rodney King and so on, then how can we possibly support disarmament? That's what the antis want, folks. The antis want the same thing that the U.S. government wanted of the Native Americans, disarmament, so they could do with them that, you know, the things that you couldn't do to somebody if they kept their guns. Why do so many of us liberals, and even some conservatives, support disarmament in light of that? I'd like you to think about that. And think about it with respect to what happened at the massacre of Wounded Knee. We'll be back in a moment. Okay, we're back. Folks, we have talked about the rules of firearm safety before. I think it's time to go over it one more time. Now, I'm not saying that any of you have done anything that's wrong or anything like that. No, so don't take this like I'm accusing you all of anything. I think it's always good to go over the rules of firearm safety. I'm going to tell you why here in a moment. There is no such thing as too much safety training. I've seen this as a rangemaster. The rules of firearm safety, let's just go over them real quick again, are as follows. Rule number one, all guns are always loaded. That's because there's no such thing as a quote-unquote unloaded gun. Matter of fact, that's one of the most dangerous things in the world is a quote-unquote unloaded gun. Rule number two, never, ever point the business end at anything that you do not intend to destroy. You just might. Rule number three, keep that finger off of the trigger until you get your sights on the target, also known as ready to shoot. Rule number four, be sure of your target as well as what's behind it. Every cop knows about this one. If they have to use deadly force, yeah, they'll do so. But they would really rather not shoot the 9-year-old kid behind the assailant with the bullet going through the bad guy into the 9-year-old. That would be bad news. We don't want that. That's why you must always be sure what's behind your target. Now, why is Cowboy T talking about this? Don't we already know this stuff? Like I said, even experience, well, I've said before, I haven't said this here, but I have said it in previous episodes. Even experienced people make mistakes. People who have been working with firearms 30, 40, 50 years, even they, a few of them have shot themselves in the leg by not following the rules of firearm safety, all four of them. Well, here's why Cowboy T is bringing this up. Not too long ago, a grandmother ended up shooting her 7-year-old grandson in the chest. She didn't mean to. Here's what happened. I'll just read the article. Lying in bed early Tuesday morning, Linda Maddox heard a noise. She felt unsafe when her son, Reginald, would work nights, authorities said. So, before she went to sleep, she propped a chair against the bedroom door, her bedroom door, and kept a gun at the ready. When she heard the chair scraping against the wood floor, authorities say, she thought it was an intruder. Maddox, age 63, grabbed the .22 caliber pistol she kept near the bed. She pointed it toward the door and, in the darkness, fired a shot. The next thing she heard was the scream of her 7-year-old grandson. When the lights came on, Tyler Maddox, that would be the grandson, lay near the door, his torso pierced by a single bullet. Rescue personnel took the critically injured boy to St. Joseph's Hospital early Tuesday, the victim of what authorities labeled an accident. Tyler, turns out, was sleeping with his twin brother, Tyreek, in his grandmother's room in the modest five-bedroom house at, well, they list the address, I won't hear, according to Hillsborough County's sheriff's officials. About 1 a.m., he got up and tried to leave the room. Deputies investigated the incident and concluded that Linda Maddox, the grandmother, mistook her grandson for a burglar. She is not likely to face charges, officials said. Tyler Maddox emerged from surgery and remained in critical but stable condition late Tuesday morning, the sheriff's office said. He and his brother live at the home with their father, Reginald Maddox, 46, a postal worker, records indicate. Neither Reginald nor Linda Maddox, his mother, have had run-ins with the law, according to state records. Sheriff's deputies have been called to the house at least 8 times since 2011, including a call about a suspicious person, a suspicious vehicle, and an identity theft case in which Linda Maddox was the victim. But none of those visits appear to have resulted in anything significant, a sheriff's spokeswoman said. And it goes on. There's a picture at the end of the article. Shows a picture of Linda Maddox and this grandson, this 7-year-old boy. He's got this big old smile on his face. Grandmother's sitting there. This obviously was before the shooting. Linda Maddox may not have, obviously did not mean to shoot her grandson. But she really messed up. She violated, at a bare minimum, rules number 1 and 4 of the rules of firearm safety. Rule number 1, all guns are always loaded. Well, maybe she didn't violate that one, because she did have it loaded and she did mean to shoot. So I guess rule number 2 was also not violated. Rule number 3 was also not violated because she did intend to shoot. She had her sights on the target. But rule number 4, that was grossly violated. Rule number 4, be sure of your target as well as what's behind it. She was shooting through a door, her bedroom door. And, oh, by the way, now you know a .22 can go through a door. I'm sure it depends on the door, but obviously it went through that one. I'm assuming it's a standard hollow core door like you normally see in, you know, modern construction these days. Went through that door. She didn't know that her grandson was on the other side of that door. She didn't know it was her grandson that was trying to get to grandma. I guess he felt kind of scared in the morning, as sometimes children do. I did at that age. She was not sure of her target, and she damn sure was not sure what was behind it. And she nearly killed that boy. Folks, the rules of firearms safety exist to keep tragedies like this from happening. So-called accidents. I know she didn't mean to do it, but you know what? This was a negligent shooting. They're all lucky that that boy didn't die. Follow the rules of firearms safety, folks, all 4 of them. There are reasons why they're there. I've seen them. We'll be back. Stick around. We're back, folks. Okay, we were talking before, in an earlier segment about brown people, specifically the Native Americans of days previous, getting shot by the army, and the history of what happens when people are disarmed. In that, I mentioned this little thing in Ferguson, Missouri that happened. Actually, it happened while I was visiting my friends. Yeah. Turned out I was going right through St. Louis right about the time that that happened. I'm so glad I didn't get caught up in that. Ferguson, Missouri is, of course, a suburb of St. Louis, Missouri. Well, there's all this talk going on now. As we all know by now, an 18-year-old black guy named Michael Brown got shot by a white cop. The officer's name was Darren Wilson. A lot of unrest has happened. There are a couple of versions being thrown around about what happened. Now, I wasn't there. I wasn't there when the shooting happened. I'm not an eyewitness, so I cannot say with certainty what happened. Neither can anyone else other than eyewitnesses to what happened. So I'm not going to get into that particular debate. What I am going to discuss, though, is why so many black people have so much trouble trusting, especially white cops. This was a major issue that has been raised as a result of this shooting. It was a direct result of this shooting. Let's talk about that for a moment. Because a lot of, especially my white conservative brothers and sisters, seem to have trouble with this. Well, you know, the blacks just don't trust white people, or they don't trust cops. And matter of fact, I heard something today. I was at a gun show today. There was a fellow who describes himself as very much conservative. And he's, well, frankly, folks, he's a good old boy redneck of sorts. Yeah, he's a doctor as well. He said, well, Michael Brown's a thug. And I challenged that. He said, well, Trayvon Martin was a thug, too. Yeah, Michael Brown's just like Trayvon Martin. I challenged that assertion quite strongly. And he ultimately ended up saying, best thing in the world, best six bullets ever used, put into Michael Brown. And at that point, I realized, this guy is not interested in carrying on a rational conversation. He's already made up his mind. Whatever Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck and all the rest of those talking heads like to say, he's obviously decided on that. He did ask me another question, though. He then said, well, what about the white man that was shot by a black police officer? How come you're not hearing all about that all over the mainstream media? Oh, boy. Talk about a false equivalency fallacy. Whew. Last I checked, white people didn't commonly get pulled over and harassed by police for driving while white. Blacks, especially black men, do routinely have that happen to them for driving while black, or walking while black, or shopping while black. I'm not aware that white people generally have that problem in this country. Actually, I'm glad white people don't generally have that problem in this country. Because, well, for one thing, my mother's a white woman. I don't want her having that problem. Certainly don't want that. And second, nobody should have that happen to them. Sadly, there is a problem of racial profiling, and it does apply to brown-skinned folks. Brown-skinned folks are racially profiled. That's why so many black Americans have so much trouble trusting white police officers here in this country. Let's consider the evidence, folks. Slavery, Jim Crow, the black codes, gun registration, gun confiscation, the KKK, and so on. We've already gone over on the Liberals Gun Corner why it is that they call it gun control. No, I'll call it what it is, gun restriction. We've gone over why gun restriction laws started. It was to disarm black people so they couldn't defend themselves. This is the newly freed freedmen. From the KKK marauding terrorists, and they were terrorists. It was so that they couldn't stop that. Consider Black Wall Street in the 1920s. The blacks there were armed. They did have guns. That's why some of them survived. Imagine if they hadn't had any guns. All those hateful white folks there, and they were hateful against the black folks then, they had guns too. The only reason that the whites didn't immediately start shooting at the blacks is because the blacks had guns and could return fire, and they knew it. Let's continue. If you tried to get a concealed carry permit for a gun, as Martin Luther King Jr. did in the 1960s, it was denied if you're black. A judge back then, back in the old South, even said that these permitting laws and these gun restriction laws were never intended to be enforced against the white population, probably because it would never pass constitutional muster. We had the 1960s. The Rodney King-style beatdowns all the time in Oakland, California, resulted in a group called the Black Panthers. Walked around with shotguns, loaded shotguns. You've seen the pictures. Rodney King, the beatdown of him. Julian Alexander, I've discussed that before. Oscar Grant. What's going on now in Seattle, or I should say what has been going on in the city of Seattle for years. Only now is it finally getting investigated. Thank goodness. It's been a problem for a long time, police brutality, especially in the Central District against black people. There is disproportionate police activity against brown folks, be they black, brown skin, Latino, Native American. Look at what happened with Michael Brown. I'm going to tell you something about that. When I was up visiting my friends, my Lakota Indian friends, they both said, that happens to Sioux Indian men all the time. It doesn't get on TV. What about our brown people? It happens to them all the time. That, folks, is why so many black people do not trust white cops. And then, in a case like Julian Alexander, Officer Kevin Flanagan goes free. Nothing happens to him. You know, it's like the fox, guarding the hen house. These internal affairs investigations, they always exonerate the officer because of this thing called the blue line. No wonder they don't trust the cops. I'm not sure that I would either if I were seeing that happening to me. Now, speaking of the blue line, let's talk about that. That friend I told you about, that Sioux Indian friend, turns out he's also a former cop. So he sees both sides of this picture. I asked him, hey man, with these bad actor cops, and I would suggest that those who beat up Rodney King the way they did were bad cops. Officer Stacy Coon, I should say former Officer Stacy Coon and his crew, they were bad actors. They didn't deserve to wear that badge. The people who raped that... That sodomized that Haitian fella over in New York in the late 1990s, they all covered their butts. I asked him, hey, how could cops not tell on their own? I mean, these are bad actors. These folks are bad actors. They're making all the cops look bad. What's going on? And my friend said, there's a side of that blue line that maybe you don't know. He said, yeah, there is a blue line. There's no question about it. Then he told me about some of the things that he has seen as a cop. Turns out where he was responsible for about 1,500 square miles of territory. Also turned out that where he would police, it was a major conduit for drugs. Meth lab type stuff. You name it, it was there. It was bad stuff. Friend of his, turns out, dropped his guard when he pulled over a little old lady. Grandma walks up to the car. He gets to the car. Grandma's a 357 Magnum waiting for him. Bang! Kills that cop. Turned out she was a mole. Or a mule, excuse me. She was a mule. She was a drug runner. He said, I've happened upon scenes where it's been really, really grisly. Really grisly. And he described some of them to me. I'm glad I have a strong stomach. He said, after that, something happens to you. It is true. And really, the only folks that can understand that are folks who've been through the same thing that you have, who've seen those things that you have and had to deal with them and sleep with them and have nightmares about them. He asked me, ever been to a place where, say, a cop's having a cookout and it is usually, five or six other cops and their families? It's generally all cops hanging out together. I said, yeah, I've seen that before. Turns out I know several cops, having worked for the school system. He said, there's a reason for that. they've come to believe that other cops are really the only ones that can understand each other. Then maybe, you know, them and folks who've come back from Afghanistan and Iraq and have really been in harsh combat, for example, the Dakota Myers of the world, the Kyle Carpenters, and so on. Folks like that. Will Swenson's. You get the idea. People have really been in the you-know-what. He also said, when they come home, they're done. It's not that they don't have PTSD. They do. But they don't have to see that anymore. They don't have to fight that anymore. Our war continues until retirement, and that's 25 years. What do you think? You really think people are going to understand us? The average civilian is going to understand what we have to deal with and live with every day we get in our squad cars and go police? And that made me think. I have to say, that made me think. This guy's a brown-skinned fella. He's a full-blooded Oglala Sioux Indian. And he's telling me, there are things that you'll never experience. Basically, thank goodness. We have to experience those as part of our jobs. And that's why we tend to get kind of clannish and back each other up. Because there, but for the grace of God, go I, is the mentality. That's the mentality that that cops think. I could be dead tomorrow. Only other cops really understand what that's about, that and certain soldiers. So I have to think about that. There are a lot of good cops out there. I still don't agree with the blue line defending bad actors. I can never, ever accept that. Stacey Kuhn and their like, they need to be outed a lot more. There are a lot of Stacey Kuhns out there. But it does give me another perspective. It does give me something to think about from the perspective of a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, who is, or excuse me, was a cop. Now, how do we reconcile those? The reality that I'm sure plenty of cops think the way my friend just described versus the civil liberties thing. I know the cops want to go home at night. They want to go home alive. Well, so did Julian Alexander. So did Oscar Grant. They wanted to go home alive too. Rodney King wanted to go home without that kind of beat down. How do we reconcile those? And folks, I'm not sure that I have the answer. If you have input on that, please email me at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. And that includes those of you who are in law enforcement. I'd like to hear from you on this as well. We'll be back in a moment. Stick around. We have returned. You know, we've talked before about this little thing called the Battle of Athens, Tennessee. If you want to know more about it, I would suggest listening to episode 3. But basically, it was a post-World War II incident when townsfolk in McMinn County, Tennessee, were being harassed by the Cantrell family and their police allies. Now, why did I bring that up? Well, it turns out the McMinn County Police are arming up again, big time. Let's see here. Let's find this. Ah, here we are. July 17th, 2014. There's an article. Less than a couple months ago. It's entitled, Local Police Stockpile Weapons of War. This is News Channel 5's network out in that part of the country. I'll just give you the first part of it here. Nashville, Tennessee. Oh, by Ben Hall. A massive military buildup is underway right here in Tennessee. Local law enforcement agencies are snatching up huge amounts of weapons from the Department of Defense used in fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. Items include grenade launchers, mine-resistant vehicles, and guns that have been deemed as surplus by the Pentagon. The equipment is cheap or free for local law enforcement agencies to acquire. The federal program has fueled a debate about the militarization of our police departments. McMinn County is located in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. It boasts beautiful scenery, but its sheriff's department can boast something else. The department received more military surplus guns than any other local department in the state last year. "We actually reconfigured the whole armory to accommodate all of this," said Sheriff Joe Guy. Sheriff Guy oversees 31 officers and investigators, but his department received 161 Army rifles and pistols, including 71 M16 rifles. No, that's not the semi-automatic versions. M16 is the full-auto version, and 71 45 caliber pistols. News Channel 5 Investigates asked, "Why does your department need all these guns?" Sheriff Guy responded, "Well, we don't need this many. There was a little error in the order." The sheriff said the Army surplus program doubled his initial order, but he hasn't sent the guns back. "They're here as our department grows. We'll have additional firearms for future officers," Sheriff Guy said. McMinn County is not alone. Now, there's more to that article. I don't want to bore you with the rest of it because it basically says, oh, the same sort of thing is going on throughout the state of Tennessee. Like, you know, everything from MRAPs to M16s are going to local law enforcement. Now, McMinn County, remember, that's where the original Battle of Athens in the 1940s happened. Apparently, they learned from their lesson. Be far, far more armed than the populace could ever hope to be. Well, I did a little searching on the original Battle of Athens, Tennessee. I suggest you all look it up, those of you who haven't. I found something, by some, some insignificant white woman who was talking about it. You know, her name was Eleanor Roosevelt. You know, she was, I think, some first lady way back in the day. Who cares about her, right? Yeah, right. Eleanor Roosevelt is, I think, one of the most prominent of our first ladies. Well, here's what she had to say about the original Battle of Athens, Tennessee. I will quote her. New York Monday. "After any war, the use of force throughout the world is almost taken for granted. Men involved in the war have been trained to use force, and they have discovered that when you want something, you can take it. The return to peacetime methods governed by law and persuasion is usually difficult. We in the USA, who have long boasted that in our political life, freedom in the use of the secret ballot made it possible for us to register the will of the people without the use of force, have had a rude awakening as we read of conditions in McMinn County, Tennessee, which brought about the use of force in the recent primary. If a political machine does not allow the people free expression, then freedom-loving people lose their faith in the machinery under which their government functions. In this particular case, a group of young veterans organized to oust the local machine and elect their own slate in the primary. We may deplore the use of force, but we must also recognize the lesson which this incident points for us all. When the majority of the people know what they want, they will obtain it. Any local, state, or national government, or any political machine, in order to live, must give the people assurance that they can express their will freely and that their votes will be counted. The most powerful machine cannot exist without the support of the people. Political bosses and political machinery can be good, but the minute they cease to express the will of the people, their days are numbered. This is a lesson which wise political leaders learn young. And you can be pretty sure that when a boss stays in power, he gives the majority of the people what they think they want. if he is bad and indulges in practices which are dishonest, or if he acts for his own interests alone, the people are unwilling to condone these practices. When the people decide the conditions in their town, county, state, or country must change, they will change them. If the leadership has been wise, they will be able to do it peacefully through a secret ballot, which is honestly counted. But if the leader has become inflated and too sure of his own importance, he may bring about the kind of action which was taken in Tennessee. If we want to continue to be a mature people who, at home and abroad, settle our difficulties peacefully and not through the use of force, then we will take to heart this lesson and we will jealously guard our rights. What goes on before an election, the threats or persuasion by political leaders, may be bad, but it cannot prevent the people from really registering their will if they wish to. The decisive action which has just occurred in our midst is a warning, and one which we cannot afford to overlook. Eleanor Roosevelt, August 7th, 1946. Folks, this is serious business. My fellow liberals, I'm going to get to you here in a moment, but first, I would like to address my conservative brothers and sisters. Many of you are not exactly supporters of the Obama administration. Oh boy, are you not supporters of the Obama administration. I have heard it in no uncertain terms. Some of them hateful, some of them quite rational. But either way, you are as concerned as I am about the militarization of the police. I've heard your expressed concerns. Hey, wait a minute. You know, what is this president preparing to fight war against? His own people? Why is he arming the police and turning them into the army? Why is he giving them war equipment, weapons of war? Why do we need our local police to have that, you ask? Even Rand Paul, who I would say is certainly on the conservative side, though he does tend to be rather libertarian as well, even he has expressed that kind of concern. And I asked him about it, and he actually addressed it. This was a few months ago. You are right to be concerned, my conservative brothers and sisters. This is as true of any president as it is of Mr. Obama. Eric Fast and Furious Holder, oh boy, I've got my differences with him. Don't even get me started on him. Now, I would also like to ask you, don't you think the people of Ferguson, Missouri might be similarly concerned in light of what has happened there with that militarized police? I can only imagine what they're feeling right now. You know, I almost got caught up in it. I mentioned earlier in this podcast, I went out to Nebraska, and I had gone through St. Louis. Yeah, I could have gotten caught up in that myself. Thank goodness I didn't. Well, my conservative brothers and sisters, just as you're concerned about what Obama's going to be doing with these militarized police, well, we saw it. There's an example in Ferguson, Missouri. Now, I hope you take that to heart, too. And now, my fellow liberals, you laugh, many of you, at our conservative brothers and sisters. You talk about how they're paranoid. The tinfoil hats. Yeah, well, Obama's going to take your guns, is what you say. You ridicule them. Well, that's not helpful either. Like I just told my conservative brothers and sisters, and I'm going to remind you, Ferguson, Missouri showed us what happens when you do that, when the police are so well armed that it's an army. You're fighting an army. You saw it. You hated it. You've expressed your problems with that to me, just as my conservative brothers and sisters have done with regard to militarization of the police. You both are right, but neither one will listen to the other. It's that team thing again, you know? Someone says something that happens to be correct. If it's a member of your team saying it, you're going to agree with it. If someone says something that's questionable, if it's a member of your team saying it, you're still going to back them up because it's a member of your team. But now, let somebody from, say, another team say something that's right. You're going to dispute it. You're going to question it. You're going to challenge it, even though it's right. This applies to my fellow liberals and my conservative brothers and sisters. Folks, both of you, wake up, please. For the love of this country, wake your butts up, because this has nothing to do with teams. What we are seeing is a problem for everybody. A militarized, army-like soldier police force is good for nobody, except those in power. Why am I telling you about this? Why do I keep stressing this over and over again, just about every doggone episode? Because maybe someone will listen. It needs to be stressed. This needs to be on every news channel, going on and on and on all the time. Not just maybe a month of good behavior because of Ferguson, Missouri. Not just because we have a black president. But this should have been happening years ago. This should have been happening after September the 11th, when the Unpatriot Act, as I call it, was first passed. I read that monstrosity. I actually read the whole thing from cover to cover. And what I read scared the hell out of me. Well, this is part of that mentality. Repress the citizenry. Arm the police. We can't use the actual army, so we'll turn the police forces into the army. You know, they like that idea. They want new toys. You know, that sheriff in McMinn County just, you know, 2 months ago said that he wasn't going to give the guns back, even though it was a mistaken double order. He's going to keep the guns. Keep whatever else he got. Grenade launchers and all that business. What the heck do the police need with grenade launchers? McMinn County is the boonies, folks. It's out in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. It's some, you know, small town with, you know, 30-something cops. They don't need to be the army. Do they? Really? So, folks, when I mention this, I really hope you're taking it seriously. It's about the most unliberal thing I'm seeing. We need to put a stop to it. You wonder why I'm such an advocate of an armed citizenry. Well, my goodness, given what the cops are getting their hands on, you really wonder why? You shouldn't. We the people need the collective ability to be able to shoot back if necessary, just like they did in the First Battle of Athens, 1946-8. Or we don't want there to be another Battle of Athens ever in this country. That's why that final resort needs to be there. You know, it's like Mark Heim over in Switzerland said, the key to freedom is the ability to defend yourself. And if you don't have the tools to do that, then you're at the mercy of those who would put you away. And the tools for that, as the Oglalas and the Minneconjus and all sorts of other Native American tribes will tell you, are guns. Think about it, folks. This is Cowboy T, signing off on another serious episode. Until next time, till then, keep practicing safe shooting. And as always, thanks for listening.